Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, the sun is shining, and, you know, I just feel I guess my heart feels open.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that process, it's feel that, be sad, this is wrong, feel bad, be sad, feel that. I feel like crying. No.
My coach and I have been talking about it like a self-contained system. It like builds up all the energy, and it's like, ooh, wow, you have a lot of really strong energy in that. That's definitely probably bad.
That's wrong. Here, let me talk it out with you. Uh-huh. Oh, now you're depressed. Well, that's not good either.
Seeing a lot, I think. Mm-hmm. So I've been seeing a lot.
Yes. Yes, that is what happens here. Mm-hmm. We get to see a lot.
You know that it speaks for you, and it was on this morning's radio show when Bob was talking about how something will just go wrong, and then it's me, it's my fault. You know, what did I do wrong? And boy, do I know that place. And it brought up it came to mind a story from when my kids were little, and it just made me so aware of what we're up against. And the story, so when I think they were like 7 and 4, and the 4-year-old comes out in her self-created outfit, one of the first, you know, on her way to preschool.
Picked it out herself. Picked it out by herself.
Exactly. And the 7-year-old, this breaks my heart, she looks at her and she takes her little face in her hands, and her sister's hand, and said, "If you wear that, they will laugh at you." And that story just came up, and I just kind of saw in a flash the whole ego process. Because sister looks to big sister now, now even. And we look to it in the exact... it's just...
Well, and the real heartbreaking thing is she was right, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the horror. At age 7, she had it all down.
Yeah, exactly. When we talk about, around the TIW work and everything, that it's like a 5-year-old mentoring a 3-year-old, And just how that system, talk about a closed, system. And I don't know, so there's something about seeing that and then hearing that example of the nail hitting the knot, and just painstakingly, lovingly, patiently staying with it. It was like in a big flash I saw what we're up against and the huge willingness to just stay doing it, stay practicing.
Because you just so wish that the older one, had somebody and not. Because you would not have been that person in any case. But that there had been a structure, a framework that she was in where she would be helped to understand why people laugh at people.
Yes.
And how not to take that on and not to be affected by it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that wasn't there anywhere.
Well, and even when, with number 3 child, there were times when we would laugh and you could see the self-conscious, and we would go, and I would say, oh, it's the delight, but there wasn't the ability I don't know if it could have made a difference, no matter what we said, because... It just seems to be what we're born into. Somehow that message that I'm wrong is going to be communicated, And I don't know. I don't think that's fatalistic, but it feels like the first noble truth that that's just how it is. We get separated from our authentic nature.
Right? Yes. Oh, well, I wasn't speculating. We're going to avoid that. Just that there could be mentoring for those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So somebody in the email class is talking about how to help her daughter not feel guilty, her 14-year-old daughter not feel guilty. Uh-huh. And, you know, what we're looking at is, well, what is your relationship with guilt?
Yeah.
Because you can't tell her not to feel guilty.
Yeah.
That's just not going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be a process of what is guilt? Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? Why do we have that?
Yeah.
Where do you feel it? What does it mean to you? What do you believe about it? There has to be, to me, a process of breaking it down until we can see what's actually going on. Then we can get to the other side of it.
Yeah.
And that's what's missing. I mean, we just...
Yeah.
It's not a priority.
And that's why this sangha and this place and this sangha, you know, where it is not missing, you know, is so priceless. And,
it is. And you know, we didn't just make this up.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that when we get into this stuff, and I just see people. And then, you know, you start reading the Buddha talking about, is the light in the lamp? Is the light in the eye? Are the sensations in the, and I can, you know, it's just like, I don't know. But that just break it down until there's nothing that you haven't seen about it. Done.
Karma claimed.
Yeah. Through that. Mm-hmm. Got it. And that's what we're doing. Yeah. Just a lot of people don't realize it's Buddhism. Jan?
Well, I guess how to break it down. I had an experience this afternoon where I just into the dark room, boom. I mean, everything, you know, all of a sudden. And, I mean, I know the content. And there was some believing of, obviously, going on that was causing that. I record and listen two-handed. Okay, you've been heard. It's pretty well gone. But then, later,
boom.
It was like, we talked about the other day, the dangling. Part would buy, you know, there'd be that little bit of buying, that level of suffering. And, okay, do I record and listen again? It's like, how do I get out of this? I guess it's part of the deal that holds it.
Yes, because I think this is where you're going. The real question is, what is this? All right, here it is.
And what is what? That was, that's where ego, or conditioning has, it's like the thimble, you know, which one's it under? And it was like, I didn't know where that needed to be pointed.
Well,
does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's the difference between seeing it and figuring it out.
Okay.
So, again, I'm sorry, my life is just one big... I don't know where I was talking about what with him. So sometimes I think, am I really just saying the same thing over and over, or does it just sound that way to me? But somewhere, we were talking about focusing. Mm-hmm. Does anybody remember where that was? It was in the email class?
It was in the email class response.
Oh, okay, good. So, well, you haven't read it yet, because you've been here. So, The process is, so that arises, right? And then you did all that, and then, but it's still there, right? There's something still holding it in place.
That I see as it gets dangled again.
Yeah, and you feel a reaction yeah? So then you sit with that. And it's not an analysis. It's not intellectual. It's a being with. And the question is,
what?
Almost almost as if you're attempting to get someone to tell you something that they want to tell you, but they don't want to tell you. And the patience to just be with until it reveals itself.
So, can I, in the guidance about the weeds and how I, is it the same? I mean, it's just waiting.
Yes.
It's,
but
it's not it's a waiting.
That's right. That's right.
It's just it's being available.
It's a waiting. So that image that we have of the cat outside the hole the mouse went in.
Oh, that's good.
It's very relaxed because otherwise, you know, the mouse just runs across its nose and it's atrophied. So that's not good. It's very relaxed.
Relaxed and intense.
Very present.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's always, the thing about that is, I shouldn't say this, but it's the fastest way out.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So trying to get out of it is just, it's somebody was talking about the Chinese, you know, puzzle. You pull on your fingers on it and it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. But when you stop and go, what? Okay, what? It's gone. Because the only thing keeping anything in place is our resistance.
Can I check in on one other thing then? So, not to go into the head, not to noodle it, the has happened and then it's being available. Is it focused here then? Okay. Because that's what I was imagining. I just wanted to check in.
And at first, you try to find it and you can't find it.
Yeah.
So, you might have to kind of chum a little, right? So, you think about whatever it was.
Bring it back.
There it is.
Yeah.
You bring it back again. There it is. And it's not a call and response. That's not right, is it? But it sort of is. Sort of like that. It's that and that are trying to unite. Mm-hmm. Okay. So with conditioned mind, we think everything is some kind of a punishment. Right? So, if this is happening to me, I must have done something wrong. But if we approach it from the perspective that karma is here to be cleaned up, it's here to be healed, so then we can sense how those two are trying to find one another.
Oh, and that's really helpful.
And when they come together, there's that moment of, oh, and it's resolved. And it's resolved in a way that it doesn't come back. So you had that letting go of it, right, when you did the two-handed exercise, but it wasn't finished. You just let go of it. Letting go of it is not the same as resolving it. Mm. Yeah. Lynette, were you next?
Letting go is not, yeah.
They're different, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay. And letting go is great. It's fine.
Yeah.
That's why ignoring is a perfectly valid spiritual approach. Right? It comes up and you ignore it. Comes up and you ignore it. Comes up and you ignore it. Pretty soon, you're not ignoring it. Right? Mm-hmm. And you have a different relationship with it.
You're in it.
Yeah. And now you're here. Now. Okay, so it's a different process from this torturing. For instance, with the so this says, well, what about that time when you were 16? Anybody else have one of those? What about that time? And you go, oh, right, because it's awful, it's embarrassing and humiliating and horrifying, guilt-producing, and I had an interesting past. Actually, nothing happened. I just made that up, okay? It wasn't that exciting at all. But it comes in and dangles that thing in front of us, right? And we can ignore it because it's not real. It's not the thing. It's there to keep us from actually having an experience of the thing.
We just ignore it.
Because I'm not going for torture. Mm-hmm. Right? But when we're to the point, when we have reached a point with that, whatever that is, that we're ready for resolution, then we will come together. And that's when the real work begins. That's when the real healing happens. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what I was going to ask is that you were so kind to tell me that I was in the process of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate the other day. And so content aside, that's the process. And then I said something, here's what I don't understand, I want to just get clarity. I said something about, well, it's very strong. And then I said something that I was very strong. And you were pointing at something, and I think you were actually talking that was ego and that was ego. And it was like a duality, is that what?
Well, more like an intimate relationship.
Okay.
Of ego and ego. Uh-huh. So when I was just talking with Laura about that, mm-hmm. that sort of takeover, mm-hmm. right? So, so I hear, I'm really miserable, I hate this. Mm-hmm. I know it's awful. I don't know how I'm going to get out of it. I need to do something. This is really awful. Well, what am I going to do about it? Now, it seems like there are two different people, mm-hmm. okay? So then there's this one. I really hate this. Well, there's nothing to hate about. Well, I don't care, I hate it. Well, you need to get over it. Now, those feel like very different people, right? Mm-hmm. So these two, you can sort of see that they're in together.
Yeah.
One's egging the other one on, and the other one's gone. But this one, mm-hmm. this one says it, and this one says no.
Uh-huh.
Well, no.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
And we would think, well, that person must be pretty centered, really, to go up against that kind of uh-huh. ego attack.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So it's the tug of war, just misery back and forth. Yeah, okay. And then the other thing you said on the radio show, which seems helpful, was that, it was this morning where life dropped in for somebody, and then they began to exercise, and then a whole different approach to exercising. And was that conditioning, or was the first one life, or was the second one life? And you said, just go with whatever. and I think that kind of applies to what I was kind of looking at. It's that there's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Because, I think this is where this comes from, that there's an assumption, there's such a deep assumption that there's a right way.
Uh-huh.
And there just isn't.
Yeah.
The assumption that whole trying to find the right way is the wrong thing to be doing.
Yeah.
It's because even if we get it right from there, it's not. And so rather than be in that place that really does just feed ego of, well, should I let
Because if life drops in and once it gets engaged with ego, then it's gone. It's a different deal.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And if we slide into that, but I'm going to get it right,
mm-hmm.
then again, so okay, you did what life originally encouraged you to do, but you still missed the point.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter. That's not a problem either, mm-hmm. right? Because actually nobody's keeping score, mm-hmm. except ego. Mm-hmm. And you always lose with ego. So.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to that, okay, so the moment passed, I don't know, I'm just going to do this. And there's going to be some sort of something for you. There will be an insight about that. Right? So, okay, I'm just going to, oh, it was the junk walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with
mm-hmm.
the coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
So I'm gonna go with that. Or okay, maybe that was life offering me this other possibility. I'm gonna go with that and see what happens.
Yeah.
You'll see what happens if you're paying attention. You'll see something if you're there. But if we're in this, then again, it really doesn't matter.
And if there's nothing wrong, it really doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. It's just the best opportunity.
Uh-huh. If we could do one thing and have people get there's nothing wrong, can you imagine how free that would be? Well, but we just all run amok. We would just go do God knows what. Like we're not already. How much worse could it be? But at least we wouldn't be agonizing. We'd have a better chance of paying attention, of learning something from what we're doing. But now we're so busy with this that we miss what's right in front of us.
Yeah, we don't live life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we don't live life. And that deep belief that's so reinforced in childhood that everything is reward and punishment. Mm-hmm. Something good happens, God must love you. Something bad happens, you ticked God off. You know, it's just so little tiny people who don't understand how things work. Mm-hmm. And when we step into that place of this is all for me. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Scott,
I'll move
over here.
I wanted to go back to what you were talking about, about the, it's like karma's like somebody who wants to tell you something but doesn't want to tell you something. Is that what you were saying?
Well, there's something. So if we consider that karma is something that happened somewhere that didn't go well, and something got stuck, right? Uh-huh. So again, that the Buddha talking about it as the knot being tied in a silk scarf. You know, something got messed up, and then it just gets left there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get better with time. So as we are working through these things, so in a non-separate reality, the reason that we can say there's nothing wrong is that this is a non-separate reality.
Yeah.
And in a non-separate reality, there can't be anything wrong because that's dualistic. If there's something wrong, there has to be something that isn't wrong. Now we're in the world of duality. In a non-separate duality, that's not possible. So we can say there's nothing wrong, or we can say everything is wrong. It doesn't matter. We can have our pick as long as we're on one side or the other. Not one side. I didn't say it. As long as we pick one. Okay. So if you can't stand the idea that everything is perfect, then everything is imperfect. It doesn't matter. We just can't go back and forth because that's dualistic. So anything that is caught in that dualistic world of suffering can be returned to what it authentically is.
It can be returned to what it authentically is. And I thought the way you said it is karma, maybe you didn't use that word, wants to be cleaned up or is here to be cleaned up. So I don't know. I just had tears in my eyes when you were talking about that. I don't know. I mean, karma's. I'm supported by karma.
Yes, something is suffering. Mm-hmm. Something is suffering. We can end that suffering. Mm-hmm. And what does that come down to? We can embrace it into the unconditional.
Yeah.
And the only thing it seems that doesn't want to do that. It's ego, that illusion of being separate, that always is angling for something to be wrong. Mm-hmm.
So that would be different than the way you're talking about karma.
Yes.
I mean it's hard because it seems to me like in a non-separate reality, this is all sort of a model, essentially,
yes.
For because otherwise we just fall into the abyss. Like, there has to be some kind of bridge to falling into the abyss, or I don't know how to say it. But.
Yes. All of this is made up.
Right.
Yeah. It's all made up. We just talk about this stuff because we have to talk about something.
Yeah, I mean, what it brought me to is that it's all orchestrated for us to wake up. That when you were doing the spot here and the spot there and the lining up, and whenever the time is right, I mean, that...
And isn't that your experience?
Yeah, well, I just felt so loved by that description.
Yeah. And, you know, you can do it all the time, anytime, right? There's something there. There's something there. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, you know, the... feels unhappy or is uncomfortable or whatever it is, and you just embrace it.
Yeah.
Come on in. Uh-huh. Come on in. What's going on? Well, that's okay. That's okay. Well, that's okay. Is there a problem? No.
And this image, I think somebody was talking about like bubbles bubbling up. And then this image of like in the ocean where the water gets pushed up into the wave and the wave covers over and kind of absorbs that water that was pushed up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is that seems like how
it feels.
Yeah. I keep waiting for a concrete thing, an example to drop in. And so anyway, I feel like I'm trying to, wait, don't leave, kind of. But I know I don't need to do that.
Right. Well, so if you consider where the questions are coming from, you'll have the answer.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what you're trying to do is come up with words and images for an experience that you're already having.
Yeah, well, that was the tears. And then I had to try to make sense of it. And it's like there's just an intuitive knowing.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost just like, thank you for articulating, like, so I could see it. Whatever, I mean, I can't see it in terms of, like, give you an example, but I saw it.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
And that's enough.
Yeah.
And the waves, that's pretty good.
The other day...
You have to really speak up to the balcony there.
When I was having my guidance with you, and I've been looking at not believing the voices of fear. And I just wanted to check, you seem to hint or just say, and I just wanted to check I got it right, that I have never been scared. That's never been my experience, actually. And it's just the voices that tell me that.
So the authenticity,
yes,
is never afraid.
Right.
Has never been afraid.
Right.
This is true.
Right. Because yes. When I left, because I thought you said that, and I nearly jumped back in to say, did you really say that? It's really exciting. I was like, you know, that was so exciting. It was wonderful. So I've been practicing with that, and it's really helpful. And I've been practicing with that, and also the breathing and the relaxing into the breath. So they all fit together. And I've been looking at how. Can you hear me?
Okay.
And I've been looking at the experience of doing that here at the monastery as opposed to in my usual home life and how everything is set up to really help with that. And today, when I did my chores from 9:30 to 10:30, I was in the meditation mind the whole time, and it was great.
I bet.
It was really good. And. So I was really aware of that. So the other days, things have been going on. For example, I think one whole day I was worried I wasn't doing anything correctly. But I knew that was what was happening. And then on a previous day, I was in some dream fantasy. But I think I knew that was happening. Whereas today, so when I've been having a meditation session here, I've been trying to keep that as I leave and walk out. And then change my shoes, and then do the next thing and try and keep it. And today it stayed for a really long time.
Uh-huh.
It was really great. It was good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you felt yourself in the mind of meditation as you were going around.
Yeah. I was able to stay with the breath and feel the relaxation and be aware of everything that was happening, the sounds and just the textures, the temperature. Yeah, it was really good.
And during those other times, you were aware of the various states that you were in. Being in a worried state, or being in a kind of a fantasy dreamlike state, or
sort of like a sort of an in and out. I think I'd maybe realize what I was doing for a very short time, and then go back into it, and then quite frequently, maybe every 5 or 10 minutes, I'd realize what, but it'd only stay for a short time.
And so how have you been practicing with the realization that authenticity is not afraid?
I've recorded that into my recorder, and I've put it with other things from mental and from life, saying how I am loved, and how nothing is wrong, and I just sort of said it about 20 times. You are not afraid. It is the voices that are telling you that you are afraid, over and over again. And at the moment, what I can just see is it's just helping me to relax, because that's where I've been having problems, relaxing the body, and it seems to be helping in that area. And I've been practicing sort of in the stomach area, on the tummy.
It's one of those just really astounding things to realize, isn't it? And so the way we often talk about it is you, and it's hard because all the same language, so you are the awareness that is aware that that's happening. And as soon as we catch on to that, we realize, well, that is my experience. What I experience as me is the awareness. It's not the process of fear. I'm not doing that. I'm not making that happen. There's a distance there.
I've sort of looked back at some occasions that have come to mind where I have thought I felt fear and seen them in a new light. Mm-hmm. It's really great. It's like being on the stage and all the spotlights are on. Mm-hmm. It is totally a new place.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to keep going with that, and excited when I get back home to see what happens. And I don't know, it feels like it'll all be new. I'll get back home and it'll be different.
Well, it will be really interesting to experience this, kind of try it on in a place where it's had such an ability to have its way with you. Are you pointing at somebody?
I saw the soldier's hand, but I don't know.
Pardon me?
I saw a soldier's hand, but I didn't know if you could.
Oh, did? Oh! Well, there they are! Yes, you're right. Thank you. I did not see them.
Yes,
I thought it was your jacket. They were so perfect there.
Yeah, the reason is that I was putting myself in the queue, but like kind of hoping I don't come out.
Kind of like
because I feel I have to say the same thing that everybody's saying, so it would be repeating the same thing.
I'm really good with that.
Because it's super cool to see, oh my God, it's the same thing. I say it super quickly. The thing that is so beautiful to know that one is not conditioning. And I was so lucky because coming here, I knew where conditioning was gonna go, because I organized my life out of not doing any chores ever. I never do anything, you know? Like
I have a dishwasher, a clean lady, I don't imagine. And so I was sure that conditioning was going to go, spoiled brat, and you're going to do it, and you're doing this wrong. But the beautiful thing is that since conditioning was going like that, you know, when I started practice, so I already knew it, I'm so used to ignore it, that it didn't get me for 1 second, you know? And something super interesting happened, though, because even if I didn't believe the spoiled brat and you're doing it wrong, the training was very hard, because imagine, I never wash dishes. Never. I never swept. You know that the other time I swept in my life, I was 16, learning English in the States.
Learning what?
English in the States.
Oh, and somebody made you sweet?
Yeah. Exactly. But it was so beautiful because I knew, you know? I knew.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because I didn't believe it, because I'm so used to not believing it, you know. And it was cool because also I knew that it was a hard training and there was gonna be a part of me that was gonna find it hard, because, I mean, if you're not used to something, it's hard, you know.
Yeah.
And so I have this venting folder in my recorder where I vent about stuff. And one day there was the assignment to sing in the Project Joy. And so I started doing Sound of Music, or the opposite. Instead of beautiful thing to sing about, all I want to vent about, I sing. So it, instead of being like venting, oh my God, it becomes, it's so cold, I hate it, it's so cold, I hate it. You know? And so I was venting, it's so cold, I hate it. And it was so beautiful because the following day I was listening, because then it's fun to listen to the venting instead of being like, oh,
yes, yeah, not depressing. Yeah. Yeah, well, I gotta sing along, vent along.
And there was a venting that really, I was, wow, if it was in English instead of in Italian, I would make them listen to it. Because it was like, how the hell do these people live? How they live? I don't understand. And then it came up, but if it is what it takes to keep the mothership going, I will do it. You know? And this morning I was listening to it and it, oh, you know?
So I want to know though, are you sort of getting the hang of chores, and when you go back home, you think you might start washing some dishes?
No, yeah, I would be so egoistic towards the cleaning lady who would have no job otherwise.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You are all part. But what you might do is give her a raise, right? Because now you really know how hard she's working.
Yeah. Actually, I always did that. But about this question, a serious answer is that I made it a point of being it about now. Because, for example, conditioning was telling me, okay, you can handle this for a week, but could you do it for a month? And it's like, now I'm doing it for a week, you know? This is what we are doing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
and that was the only answer. And also because if it were a sports training, you know, and if I were training for a marathon, passing from zero to a marathon, you know, it takes a bit, you know? Mm. So yes, the answer to the question is, who knows? Maybe, because who knows what forms of doing similar things can exist in my life at home.
Yes.
But I don't want conditioning to go there, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You want to be free of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I actually like chores.
Yeah, everybody was saying how they love it.
I don't understand.
Oh, but I enjoyed myself. It's not that I didn't enjoy it, but it wasn't like, oh my God, I love it.
Well, for me, it's not the chore per se. I love taking care of things.
Yes. That I can understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's the the joy of it to me. It's they're all my friends. Mm-hmm. And I like to take care of my friends. Mm-hmm.
By the way, about that, the point of view really shifted when I realized this is my spiritual home. So it's like taking care of my home.
Yeah.
So I want it to be clean and beautiful, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Ashwini.
So I just love it when the thing that you're looking at gets resolved in group. And so there's something that I want to check in. So the two things that I was... So what I was looking at is, I'm fairly certain, from my experience, that there aren't things that are inherently bad.
Inherently bad?
Right. They don't have nothing has a quality that isn't ascribed to it. And so an example would be, laundry is laundry. Am I having a good time with it or a bad time with it? It has nothing to do with the laundry is inherently good or bad. It's just laundry. So the process of inquiry is around, there are certain things that I do that result in collapsed awareness. And there are certain things that I do that always result in expanded awareness. And so then the question becomes, if there's, contextually speaking, nothing is inherently has any attributes, then what is that process of, if I do X number of things, and they tend to be tasks where focus is required, and focus often results in collapsed awareness for me. That's I think what I'm getting to.
So, you mean if you had to do a lot of email?
Yes.
Something like that, where you have to really be focused on it, but it's not necessarily something that you're interested in or enjoy.
You know, but sometimes I am. Sometimes there's no aversion to it. But what I've been trying to explore is what is it that causes?
Here we go. What?
Yeah. Tell me about the process of what is it that if there's a is it urgency? Is it that there's a sequence of these movements that happens one after the other that results in a hole that I fall into? Is it the fact that there's energy that's present and therefore laundry is fun in one moment and laundry is not fun in the other moment? Like, what is it?
Yeah, and with that energy, one of the places, I don't know, but one of the places you might look is, since you're looking at it from a perspective of energy, does the energy start out in one place and then over time, it changes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, yes.
And that's part of the collapse. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, sometimes we can be doing something, and it's there's a level of stress involved, mm-hmm. but we're not paying attention to the level of stress because it's not big, but over time, mm-hmm. it's like a you know, it's one of those where it's here and this is here, and then over time it goes like this until pretty soon there's all stress and no energy.
Right. Yes, that's exactly my experience. It's all stress and no energy. And the interesting part is, and this is where the practice of inquiry would be, is so if I'm writing or if I'm walking in nature or any of those places, they're not stressful inherently, and I don't know whether it's because they aren't inherently that, or I'm conditioned in different ways around that. I don't know if that's even a relevant question, but it seems to be a certain set of things that produces that. And so.
And yet, what you're saying is, not always.
Not always. Exactly. Yeah. That's the conundrum. But more often than not.
Uh-huh. Yes. Now, for me, the thing that I enjoy about Zen practice is using those as an opportunity not to do that. Rather than needing to figure out why something is happening the way it's happening, simply to know that there is, it's what we say around here all the time, you know, it's when you're a monk, you have two choices. You can do what you do happily or unhappily. Those are your choices. It's not like the choice is do it or not do it. Terrified, isn't it? So, because that is what is really true in life. Those are actually our only two choices. Now, because most people live somewhere where they have a lot of choice about what they do, then it seems like I can choose this and that makes me happy, and I'm not going to choose that because that doesn't make me happy. And so anytime we're in a situation where that choice is taken away from us, it's a tremendous advantage, because then we get, it's up to me. Every moment of life is up to me. I can be having a good time or a bad time. Choice is mine. It's not dependent upon the externals. It's not dependent upon what I'm doing.
So the thing that dropped in to resolve it, as opposed to figuring it out, was the thing you said about inviting the duality into the unconditional.
Okay.
Because the movement that I saw is, that's the movement from the duality to the unconditional.
The inviting it in.
That's right. In other words,
yes.
that if I'm in it trying to, I don't know, it was just so, it's one of those places where the clarity dropped in around the situation is, it's not external, it's not inherent. Like, the quality isn't inherent, inherently bad or good.
That's
and
right.
It's not, my experience is not dependent on what I'm doing, because
right.
there is no inherent bad or good.
That's right.
But the process of exit is just simply inviting what's bad into
yes.
the context of the unconditional.
Yes.
Yes.
And you could have a venting folder. Because there's nothing in it that says you have to be cheerful about it.
Yes.
Right? That ultimately you'll get there, mm-hmm. but on the way to getting there, we're not talking about repression or suppression.
Yes.
Not at all. You get to feel everything that you feel, which is also part of the inviting it in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what I was noticing with it is, so the relationship with it has changed, right? So you suddenly wake up and you feel like you are told that you've had a horrible set of hours where it's been completely miserable. But it seems to me that if I'm practicing expanding the context in every moment, so when I notice it's not working and I expand the context, I notice that I've collapsed or awareness and expand the context, that I can wipe out so many hours of not having, of being unconscious by simply expanding the context now.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes. And, of course, so many of the things that we do in practice are designed not to have hours of unconsciousness. Right? So we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we can be unconscious for extended periods of time.
Yes, but that's an interesting place, because I'm not sure that I'm unconscious. I think I have a collapsed awareness. In other words, it's not a lack of, I actually don't know that, but I'm aware. Yeah.
So so it's more like a tunnel vision.
That's right.
Then it's it's not walking around in that expanded place where you're aware of all of the sounds and you're in the mind of meditation. It's collapsed awareness, is what you said.
Well, and I think that what you're pointing at is the ability to there is a, if I'm paying attention though with a little bit more expanded awareness, I would love to see if there is a point at which it falls off from focused attention to unconsciousness. At which point there's a conversation that leaks the energy, and then I wake up into finding that place of I'm not having a good time.
Yeah. So that could be an argument for setting alarms.
Yeah.
So that something is was it today? Laura was talking about that. So that you're consciously, constantly being brought back, and you have a chance to see where was I just? Yes. Because that's one of the marvelous things. You've all noticed this, that if you've been gone, when you come back, there is a sense of where you just were. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like waking up from a dream. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stay a long time. Mm-hmm. So you want to be right there to catch it. Mm-hmm. But you can see where you were. Mm-hmm. And so to be brought back regularly and have a growing sense of what that progression is. Yeah.
I'd like to talk a bit about the Project Joy assignment that we talked about this morning, that we become what we think about all day, and catching on to the process of the conversation. And so last night when I was recording about what I'd noticed during the day, and I think the assignment was something like, if you transcribe the thoughts, what would you see about the illusion of a separate self that the conversation is creating? And what I noticed was that the process was non-acceptance.
Was?
Non-acceptance.
Uh-huh.
So rejection of everything. Like that sort of critical, judgmental no. A non-acceptance, a no. And as I was seeing that, there was some sort of space for something else. And what I realized was there's a situation going on that's never had unconditional acceptance.
Uh-huh.
It's had all sorts of attention on it, uh-huh. But what it's never had is unconditional acceptance.
Wow. And I'm guessing that you mean on a process level as well as a content level. Mm-hmm. But it's just never been accepted as it exists.
Exactly.
Even that it exists.
Mm. Yeah, probably because there's so much conversation about resisting it and mm-hmm. fixing it, which is so abstract. Mm-hmm. So there was just like a...
Wow.
A wow.
Yeah. And how much, I'm guessing this is part of it, how much conversation is required to keep something in absolute lack of acceptance that is here all the time. So that's quite a feat.
Mm-hmm. The thing is here all the time, or the
Is here all the time.
Yes.
Being kept in unacceptance.
Yes.
So it's here all the time, being resisted.
Exactly. It's here all the time, being resisted all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if we go back to our little building projects of the collar tie. Right? Mm-hmm. Collar tie is holding the building from collapsing this way and from collapsing this way. Uh-huh. Right? So that process that you just described is kind of a karmic collar tie.
Collar tie?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Because mm-hmm. it's here mm-hmm. and it's being resisted.
Yes.
So what a perfect way to hold something in place.
Yes. Very solidly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I bet it wouldn't take too much for all of us to find the examples mm-hmm. of that in our own lives. Mm-hmm. Where something is here, it's undeniably here, mm-hmm.
and it's being resisted, and that resistance is what's holding it in place.
Yes, and two things about that. One, it's like I could feel in the body like all the cells tuned to no. So it was like, and a really angry, like clenched no, keep out, no, rejecting, non-accepting. Mm-hmm. And so just that feeling of that bringing acceptance and just letting them, you know, tuned in. Mm-hmm. Yes, or whatever. The second thing was how much of that energy is just like that something wrong, right? That's like what that creates or is built on and like keeps that pressure of a something wrong energy vibration all the time. Mm-hmm. Like the situation where it's always being, you know, people thinking it's their fault and how can we fix it and me thinking it's my fault and how can I, you know, all like that based on the belief that there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. And to just move into that place of unconditional acceptance and seeing something that is and isn't in that dualistic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, for all of us, it's that, well, but who would I be? Because we can sense that, right? With that, everything in me is going, no.
Yes.
Well, if I accept that,
yeah.
I am what says no. And so, where does that leave me?
The things just fall down.
They probably go this way.
Which way would they go?
This way. Uh-huh. Right? Because they can't both go this way and they can't both go this way, so they're going to be a parallelogram. Oh, wow. Is that what that is?
Yeah. I'm going to sit with that image.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because, if it weren't a matter of identity, what difference would it make? You know, with any of the stuff we've got going, if it weren't about me, who cares? You know, whatever you people have going, I don't care. On me, you know, you'd be up all night going, oh, God. You know? Tell me about it. I just go, oh, boy. I'll just sleep. But if it's me, well, now we're talking about something important, dear. And that's all it is with any of us, isn't it? What's the big deal about it? It's me. Right? It's not. Otherwise, we'd all be agonizing over the same thing. We're definitely not. I mean, we do have opinions about what other people are or are not agonizing about, right? But basically, we don't care. Is that true? Am I just an uncaring person? You know, and so, I mean, here, all of this stuff, I mean, we have to go around all day long talking to ourselves about who we are and what's important and remember what we did wrong and what we're worried about and what we're concerned about and what that means about that and what if this and what if that and... It's a constant conversation to what? So I don't forget myself. So I don't lose myself. Mm-hmm. Right? Do you know? Mm-hmm. Is this true?
Yes.
Yeah. So with all that no, and then as soon as you say yes, well, how relaxing. Mm-hmm. And if the building falls down, what difference?
Yeah.
Because we won't, right? We don't. All that happens is we're free. Mm-hmm. What will people think? Nothing. People aren't thinking now. They won't think then. In fact, this person in the email class, it's just so, I want to do that. The whole thing is wanting these people to see her in a certain way.
And they don't, clearly. I mean, we're in class three, and they're still not. I'm guessing. And, you know, she wants this thing that requires their approval, and she's not getting it. And from what I read into it, she's clearly a really wonderful person, right? But you can't please everybody all the time. And the agony of, but what do I do to get these people to approve of me, to see me, to... You can't. And yet, anybody spend any time worrying about that?
Not really, not much.
Not much.
Bigger fish to fry. Thank you.
Karen, did I see your hand?
Well, I was just thinking as you were saying that, now I'm not familiar with that building term of a collar tie, but when you said it keeps the, that me...
You've seen them. I mean,
I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm just not familiar with the term.
In most places, hold the ceiling up. But
So I was, as you were describing it, I was. It was seeming like me is the collar tie of suffering.
Me is the collar tie of suffering. Well, oh, my two worlds just collided. Well, if you've got the two sides of a duality, and what is being maintained in those two sides of the duality is me, right? And a million identities, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like this, I'm not like that. Mm-hmm. I do this, I don't do that. I want this, I don't want that. Yeah, I mean, just name every, probably every, whatever. And
all of that
is holding. Yes. Well, it holds in place the me that can suffer, yeah. The me that does suffer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not exactly a T-shirt or. Me is the collar tie.
It can create a lot of conversation.
Yes. Yes.
I was just going to say that's such a relief, and when we get that simple and that straightforward, like you were just talking about, it's such a great reminder of how conditioning can just weave its way into the wallpaper. Now let me see. I mean, maybe if it's this and this and that. Oh right, it doesn't matter at all, any of it. Wow.
Any of it.
And you know, that is the best place in the whole world. That to me is the place, every time I remember that, I have this distinct experience of when I just really take that in again, I'll wake up in the morning the next day and it's just the biggest relief. Mm-hmm. It's just like this, it's like getting a haircut and cleaning your house and everything, all of this. It's like, wow, there's nothing.
Yeah.
It's just so fresh and open, and you can't, anything, any way to describe it actually would start to put something where it isn't. Mm-hmm. But it's just that, like, oh, thank God. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I know it's not the most meaningful thing in the world, or I don't know why somebody always puts that behind her. Isn't that nicer? Mm-hmm. Well, not for you people. Let's see what. Something for everybody. That the magnitude of dropping the conversation.
Oh my God. And not talking about dropping the conversation. That's the difference between those two. But no. Gosh, I really, you know.
I know I need to.
I'm working on it. You know what I really do?
This is a conversation.
If I could just, maybe a sticker, if I could have a sticker chart, and then I could,
yeah.
Oh wait, drop the conversation. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm reading Bankai, and I don't know if anybody's ever read Bankai, but he says, the unborn Buddha mind is illuminating and perfectly manages everything. That's pretty much it. And then he went there and said that to that group of people, and then that group of people came and he said that to them. And then on the third day of the retreat at the Sutton, he said that to them. And he said, you know, people, he talked about it, he said, you know, people point out that I seem to say the same thing all the time. And he's, and basically his point is, because the unborn Buddha mind is marvelously illuminated and manages everything perfectly. You know, there's that sense that he's having a different experience. But that's what he's actually trying to say.
Yeah.
That you don't have to have that conversation.
Yes.
You when you hear the bird, you hear the bird.
Yes.
When it's time to put on your clothes, you put on your clothes.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't have to have that constant. Mm. It's not helping. Mm. It's not doing anything.
And the way that he describes it, that place of like, to realize a huge percentage of what we're actually, like our bodies are actually doing, is happening in the unborn Buddha mind.
Yes.
I mean, I guess all of it, really.
Yeah, yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's just that there's this overlay.
Where it's being managed perfectly.
Exactly. I mean, and right, talking about the body. Oh my gosh, what a good example.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember if it's him or whoever talks about, what if we were in charge? The heart beating and the lungs.
Yeah.
It'd be like, done.
Yeah. There I am. Now I've got to my knees. The heart started. Shoot.
Oh my God.